This is the Horse Radio Network.
This is episode 25 of Horsemanship Radio, brought to you by Index Fund Advisors, IFA.com. Horsemanship Radio is part of the family of the Horse Radio Network. And today, we have a lifelong horsewoman, and she's a mother of two boys, and she's taught over 3,500 children in her career, and she shares her belief in natural horsemanship as the catalyst to building trust in horses. Isn't that nice? And we have also Denise Heinlein, a certified Monty Roberts instructor, and she comes to us today to talk about the importance of building a foundation of your relationship with the horse. It's all about the good ground manners first. This is Debbie Laux, and you're listening to Horsemanship Radio. Welcome back, everyone. Horsemanship Radio airs on the 15th and the 30th of the month, and I have my producer, Jen, with me today. Hi, girl. How are you?
I'm doing great. I can't wait to hear our guest today. This is going to be fascinating stuff. And the fact that our guest teaches children a lot.
Yeah.
I think that's fascinating because I think... I hate to say the word because natural horsemanship, as Glenn said, has become an overused term. But working with horses by using their own instincts to their advantage rather than trying to make them behave more like humans.
That's right.
Right? Yeah. It's really exciting because you are just now starting to see it trickle down to the very beginners. And I thought about that because I just got a book in the mail from... Trafalgar Square Books, who sends us books to review all the time. And somebody has written a book specifically for children to help them understand the concept of natural horsemanship. And I'm thinking to myself, what's it going to be like 20 years from now when we have an entire generation of horsemen and horsewomen who understood this process from the very beginning versus learning what we now call traditional horsemanship? And then having to morph those skills into something more natural. How that's going to change the landscape of competition.
That's right. It's already changing, but you're right. Generationally, we need to have this pervasive, you know. And I think the horses are saying, great, it's about time, you know. Mm-hmm. We've been waiting for you all to catch up. But you're already seeing things at the very top, the Olympic level, like we saw in London, where the judges are starting to say, hey, it's about harmony. It's about the relationship between the rider and the horse. And I think we're starting, it's the reason that so many of our certified instructors are so young is because they were a clean slate, you know. They didn't have to unlearn those muscle memories. And our guest today started really young, but they didn't start with a lot of tradition. When you hear their stories, you'll see that, one is in Haiti, and there wasn't any horses really around. There were not really there were working equines, but that's about it. They were tractors. But the horsemanship was being brought down there and retaught by this very young girl. And then Denise from Germany will introduce her. She is one of those young crops that came up just a phenom in the saddle, but also just loved horses. She also hates cold, so we're really lucky to have her here and out of Germany. She doesn't like all that cold in Germany. So they're starting to now be the trainers of this young generation, these young kids who are throwing away the pink crops and throwing away the whips and spurs. As you know, there's only one trick to this. You have to tell yourself that pain or force is not an option. Because if you can take that out of the equation, your muscles are going to have to learn how to help that horse understand what you want. It's just not an option. And then you'll start listening and paying attention, and you'll hear what our guests are going to talk about with that. So up next, we have an amazing coach of young horse persons.
Hi, I'm Mark Hebner, president of Index Fund Advisors and proud owner of Monty Roberts Willing Partners graduate, He's a Sugar Bear. You know, investment portfolios are a lot like horses. You need to find one that best suits you, your temperament, and your stage of life. Some people might like an energetic horse and an aggressive investment portfolio, while others are more comfortable with a gentle ride and a more conservative investment portfolio. The trick is to find the one that's right for you. That's what Index Fund Advisors is all about, matching people with portfolios, risk-appropriate, low-cost, and globally diversified investment portfolios. You can find the right portfolio for you by taking the Risk Capacity Survey at ifa.com. That's IFA as an Index Fund Advisors. Or you can call us toll-free at 888-643-3133. That's 888-643-3133.
Hannah Campbell Zaplatal grew up on a training and breeding farm in Haiti, where her family helped reintroduce the horses and the buggy technology, buggies, you know. In 1993, she started Wildwood Farm while she was attending university, and she and her husband Peter run the family-oriented farm. It's like always bustling with children and animals and love and respect for the horses and their people. You can just almost hear it and smell it right now. It's just really cool out there. Hannah has been a Monty Roberts certified instructor in Cumming, Georgia since 2000, the year 2000. And she also offers training and riding lessons and showing and camps for both adults and children. And she's coached several high school teams to the Nationals, the IEA, and including a world title. We love Hannah for her dedication to preserving loving, respectful, yet nonviolent approach to working with horses and students, too. Welcome, Hannah Campbell Zaplatal. How are you with the big name, Hannah? How's everything going there?
I am doing great. We are enjoying a beautiful day here in Georgia.
I love it. You're on the East Coast time, and I'm on the West Coast time, so I appreciate you taking a little extra out of your day, because I know one of the most amazing things that you told me about what you're doing these days is that you have about 3,500 children that you give horseback riding lessons to. I assume that's not all at the same time.
That is correct. That was over the last 20 years.
There we go. Yeah. You've been doing this a long time, and I love what you do on Wildwood. But we'd like to get the audience to know you a little bit, listeners to know you a little bit, and some of your background. We gave some of your bio, but you have such a unique perspective on horsemanship and your background, your growing up. Give us a little bit about where you were born and how you got into horses.
Sure. I come from generations of horse people, but I had the opportunity to grow up in Haiti. I had my parents were missionaries down there, and I was actually born down there. And we helped reintroduce the horse and buggy idea. And so we had horses there. We bred horses for that because the horses in Haiti are mostly ponies. They're 11, 12 hands tall. And so we brought a quarter horse stallion in from the King Ranch, and he bred to the local mares, which created a horse about 14 hands tall. Mm-hmm. And we used those horses for animal traction. And so we helped people learn how to use a horse to its full capacity of strength versus how much it could carry versus how much it could pull.
Mm-hmm. So this was transportation as well as this was their tractor working
the
farms?
Uh-huh. Correct.
So how do you get a lot of strength out of a 14-hand, I guess you were breeding for it first, but the training for it, how did you train for strength?
The training for strength, not so much training for strength as training for diet. In Haiti, it's mostly desert, and so you couldn't have too big of an animal because they'd literally starve to death because there wasn't enough food for them. Mm-hmm. They don't have, like, grain stores and whatnot that you can just go buy feed. It's whatever the animal can get off the land. So you want a horse that's small enough to be able to live on lower calorie amounts, but also a horse that's big enough that if you hitch two or three or four or six together, they could pull, 100 sacks of cement home on a wagon and stuff like that.
Ah, fun. Yeah. So what's your earliest memory of some of that? What's your earliest memory of Haiti?
The earliest memory that I can remember with horses, I was probably three, and we were coming home. Dad did all the hay by hand, like with a scythe that literally would cut the hay and then put it up on a big wagon. And we were coming home one night, and I was just little, and we were sitting up on top of the hay, and my memory, we were really high, but I doubt we actually were, but by memory, we were really high. And of course, there's no electricity in Haiti where we were. And so the stars, there were millions of them, and we were listening to the clip-clop of the horses pulling the wagon and smelling that sweet hay and the stars overhead and Mom talking to us, and just a really happy memory of being a little girl in Haiti.
Ah, that is. That's amazing. And I think you told me that you were, this was a special thing being a white person in Haiti back then. Not that you're like 85 years old or anything. You're not. But it wasn't that long ago that
exactly. I left there in 93. I was the first white baby born there in probably close to 200 years. And so it was almost like a Lion King moment when I was born. Because people said, you know, I would be born black because all people in Haiti are black. And my mom tried to tell them, no, if the parents are white, the baby will be white. And they're like, no, they'll be black. And so when I was born this, you know, red-pink color, the people were just amazed. They're like, wow. And then I stayed that color.
Yeah.
Which was even more amazing, which was kind of fun. The lesson in genetics.
Yeah, a little breeding DNA lesson there too. We'll have to show your photo in the show notes. You're definitely white.
Yes.
Beautiful lady that she is. Go look at the show notes. But and then how did you get to Georgia? So you grew up, you stayed in horses.
I grew up there. We had horses. I rode horses all the way through high school. You could either walk or ride. There's no point to walk when you can ride.
Yeah.
And an orthopedic surgeon used to come to Haiti every year, and he was on a board of trustees at this little school up in a little town called Waleska, Georgia, and said that because of my very unique schooling experience, I was basically homeschooled all the way through high school, that to get into a college back in 93 was a little trickier than it is now for a homeschool kid to get into college.
Yeah.
And he said, I want you to start there. It's a small school. There's only 900 students in it. Start there, kind of get acclimated to the U.S., and then go from there. So I went to Reinhardt, graduated from there, and I met and married my husband then at that point in time, and I started the farm. They had land. It was raw land full of trees, and over the last 18 years have systematically cut trees, put in fence posts, built a barn, so forth and so on. And then we recently relocated our farm to an even bigger farm February of this past year.
That's right. You have now, I think you said it was 182 acres?
Yes, 182 acres. It has two 35-stall barns, a covered arena, two outdoor arenas.
Mm.
It's bordered two-thirds of the way around by a big river. It's a magnificent piece of property. I mean,
man, there's a lot of people, their mouths are watering right now, picturing their horses.
Yeah, me too. I still go there and I'm like, oh my gosh, where do I start? How is this mine?
It is a lot of work, though.
It was
laid waste for a little while, too. So you're actually climbing out.
It was foreclosure, and so that it sat empty for almost 4 years. Mm. And so it's been a lot of picking up pieces, you know, tightening fence and picking up trees and, you know, just getting everything cleaned back up again and reorganized and get it back off the ground.
Well, great. Well, that's exciting. That's a lot of work. Hopefully a lot of people listening will say, I'm going to go visit her in Georgia now, too. But
yes,
let's get into horses. Thank you. That's nice. So let's get into horses a little bit and talk about how you came to become a certified instructor, and then how you had a dream of riding lessons and working with children and training horses. And I'd love to hear some more about that.
Sure, absolutely. I came here in the U.S. in 93, and I did not have horses. And to not have a horse when, you know, basically a horse was your everything in Haiti, was like having my arm cut off. And a big farm that I worked for, just to be around the horses, gave me a horse. And the gift horses are always one of those things. And she had been extremely abused. I mean, to the point you could not touch her head. It took me 2.5 years to pick up her right front foot. I mean, absolutely space cadet. You go in the pasture, she'd be on her hind legs. She would pin her ears and chase you out.
Yeah.
And I'm not that afraid of horses. You know, I'm usually pretty brave, except for she really would test your mettle. And a friend of mine gave me Monty's book, Man Who Listens to Horses. This was back in 95. And I read through it, and I saw all these signs, and I had been training horses since I was big enough to sit on one. And I was like, okay, Mare, you and I are going to see if this works or not, because goodness knows I'd tried just about everything else, and nothing really helped break through to her. And so I did a join-up. And compared to what I do now, it was very rough and you know, ragged around the edges. But in about 2 hours, I accomplished join up.
Two hours.
Yeah, I didn't know. I'd put 2.5 years into her already. I figured, you know, that's what I had read about it. And she came around.
Good.
And I came out one day, and I had kids, not my personal kids, but some students had caught her by accident and had tied her to the fence, the gate, and were standing there brushing her, thinking that she was one of my old mare's conspiracy that they were supposed to ride their lesson on. And you know, that's how much of a change it did in this mare.
Is that right?
Where she would go from rearing on her hind legs when you walked out to the field to where these little kids had managed to get a halter on her and had her tied to the fence post, and she was standing there with her head down, eyes closed, getting groomed. I was so fired up because I was like, you know what? If this could do this much work for this mare who had been so traumatized, what could it do for the other horses?
Yeah.
And I was training a lot of horses at that point in time. And so I did join up my version of it with everyone I could get my hands on. Now, keep in mind, it was ugly at this point. I did not, you know, I was not that skilled at join up, but I knew the rudiments of it, and I was getting fantastic results. And Monty came to Atlanta, I believe it was in 96, 97. Mm-hmm. And I watched him do it, and I was like, oh, that's what it's supposed to look like.
You were book learned. That's right. You were just book learned.
Yeah, and I just gleaned whatever I could get out of that book, and that's what I was doing. And so I had an opportunity to talk to him very briefly in one of his, you know, 1,000-people lines, and talked to him, and he signed my book, and I was all excited. And I went home, and I practiced again for another year. On, you know, we had a lot of horses in training. I was doing anywhere from 10 to 15 horses a month, starters and all kinds of stuff outside of that. And I got to see Monty, and he came back again. And this time I had a better understanding because now I had seen him do it, and I was like, okay, I got this. And so in 99, a friend of mine made it possible for me to go to Flag. And Crawford Hall, who was the dean of students at that time, went for a join-up clinic. And in those days, it was like a week long. And he asked me to come back and do the instructor's course because I kind of cheated in the sense that I had already been playing with the join-up for 4 years at that point. And so he asked me to come back and do the instructor course, which I did in 2000. And then I completed that in November of 2000. And then it's been all the rest is history, as they say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you've been busy since. That's the nice thing about it. So you actually have about 15 years, close to 15. More than that, no, of not only training but using the join ups. Certainly, right. If you were 96, yeah, and playing around with it, that's mm-hmm. about as long as it gets. Other than Monty,
yes, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. It was the early 90s.
What it can do for the horses and the people that have to work with them is just—I mean—it just blows your mind.
Mm-hmm.
And people say, "Well, it can't really be that easy." Well, yes, it can actually.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe we should explain
behind it.
That's right. Yeah, there's a little muscle memory in it too. But maybe we should explain a little bit to people what your interpretation, your definition of join up is, because there's a lot of it out there.
Sure. My definition of join up is creating a situation where you invite the horse to be with you because what you have is mutually beneficial for both of you. And that being is that they see you as the leader of their herd, so that you have the authority to ask them to do things that they may not want to do, like, for example, jump over a fence or chase a cow or something like that you want them to do, so that when they have the opportunity to see you as the leader. And it's mutually beneficial because it makes it easier on them to do their job, and it makes it safer for you to do your job because then you're working together as a partnership, not as a I will make you do it or else.
Beautiful.
And it covers a lot of ground.
It does. It builds a lot of trust, too. That's mm-hmm. wonderful. Thanks.
And
well, how do you...
trust takes time. People always say, well, you wave a magic wand, and well, that's not always true. You have to work at it.
Yeah, build consistency, I guess. Although you did achieve in 20 minutes, which you hadn't achieved before. I think that common language between horse and man, when the horse recognizes that you recognize his language, that trust can happen pretty darn quickly. But you're right. If there's been a lot of foul play between man and horse, there is some undoing.
Time.
Yeah, for a long time, it's some undoing to do, too. Tell me how you take this to the medium-sized kids, the 8 to 12 kids, because there's a lot of us listening who either have grandchildren or children that we love our horses and we want so badly to impart that knowledge over to kids so at least they have the choice to love them as sure. well.
Sure. I take the adult version of the Join Up Clinic and I've shrunk it down to a child-friendly version of it. It's a one-day, mm-hmm. takes about 6 hours depending on how many kids come, and we learn the Join Up process. We learn how to send the horse away. We learn how to turn the horse. We learn how to look for all the signals, the head down, the ear, the licking and chewing, the coming in towards you, all those signals, and then they can achieve Join Up themselves. And so, for example, if you have a pony that's, let's say, misbehaving in the arena, like we had the other night, one of the ponies was just being an absolute clown and was not listening to his rider, well, we were able to very quickly get that child off the pony, get the other pony stopped in the middle of the ring where they would be safe, and did a Join Up right there in the arena. And the kid that was on the pony got to do the Join Up so that when they got back on, the pony was already going, oh, okay, here, boss, you do want me to jump that jump. Okay, I got it.
Great.
So, it's something that you can very quickly fix before it becomes a bigger problem.
You actually did a little added, you did an attitude adjustment right there for the kids.
You got it. You got it. And it empowers the kid because they get so psyched up about it because they did it.
Yeah.
It's not some adult that came in and jumped in and saved the day. They did it. They saw what the pony was doing prior. They did the Join Up. They saw what happened to the pony afterwards. And it empowers them.
And without a whip.
It's really exciting to watch them.
I imagine. And without a whip, I you know, you have your ear to the ground in so many equestrian centers, and you hear it, you know, whip him a little harder. He's not listening yet.
You got it.
Yeah, I would love to discourage that more and more if we could. Because kids don't like doing it so well is what I've noticed.
Well, of course not.
Mm-hmm. Yet when we go to the trade shows, we see a lot of really neon pink colored they look like whips. I don't know. Mm-hmm. They look like they're being marketed to children. Do you see a lot of that?
I see a lot of that. Yeah, of course, all those fancy colors and everything like that.
Uh-huh.
And you know, the people just don't know. And so it's our job to help them understand that's not necessary.
That's good. So you're giving choices out there.
Yeah, exactly.
Wonderful.
Or the best one is when you watch at the end of the horse shows. We do a lot of horse shows, and people are trying to reload their horses. Uh-huh. And they're out there, and I usually let them work for about an hour, and then I'll offer if they need some help. And sometimes they'll take it, and sometimes they won't.
Is that right?
And, you know, you pull out your handy-dandy dually halter, and within about 10 minutes, they're on the trailer, and they're like, how did you do that? It's like, well, let me teach you. Let me show you. You don't have to beat the horse on the trailer. That doesn't work. Not more than once or twice.
Yeah, that's right.
And there's so much easier ways of doing it.
Yeah, well, that's great. We need to learn some of that, too. We'll have to have you give some of your insights on trailer loading alone. That would be a whole episode on itself, I think, too. Sure. A lot of people make those horses think backwards instead of forwards.
And
it's not working too well out there, we've noticed. Yeah.
You could make a lot of money if all you did was trailer load horses at the end of the show.
there's the people who braid at the beginning of the show, and there's the trailer loading.
Yes, exactly. The person that loads them back up on the way home.
Very good. People have ideas now. They're going to come to you.
Yeah, well, there you go. We do a lot of trailer loading.
That's right. Thanks, Hannah. It was so much fun to have you today, too. And I would love to have you back for a tip that I know
Absolutely.
That you're training a lot of horses and a lot of people, too. And if we can, we'll find a time when you can spare 5 minutes and get back on here with a tip. Would that be okay?
Sure, that would be great. Absolutely.
It'd be awesome.
Look forward to it. Thank you for the opportunity.
And thank you for joining us, Hannah Campbell-Zepetel. Next, our topic is the importance of ground manners. Listen in.
Hi, I'm Monty Roberts, and I know that I'm transforming the lives of horses globally. You can learn to do it too on my Equus Online University. There's a new lesson on there each week, all the way from Join Up to Advanced. Watch world's champions give their lessons. Join at MontyRoberts.com. Go to my Equus Online University. You can transform your horse too.
Denise Heinlein discovered her passion for horses at the very early age of 5 when she started to ride. She got her own horse when she was 13 and still owns him. Denise spent time learning from different Western trainers in Canada, Austria, and Germany. And since 2006, Denise has followed the Monty Roberts methods, working and learning from Monty himself and several of his certified instructors in California, Germany, Portugal, the Netherlands, and England. She rides starters and remedial horses. And in November of 2009, Denise accomplished her goal of becoming an instructor in Monty's methods, and she went to work in the thoroughbred industry after that. She's now working and teaching at the Monty Roberts International Learning Center in California. Welcome, Denise Heinlein. Thank you for joining us today. You're out at Flag Is Up Farms today, right?
Yes, right. That's a lovely day today at Flag Is Up Farms.
Perfect. It's always perfect weather at Flag Is Up, though, right?
Mostly. Time, yes, definitely.
People should go to Denise's Facebook page if you end up being one of those lucky people or friends of her. She has beautiful pictures of on the beach, not so much on horses, but you visiting the beach. Being from Germany, I suppose the beaches here are a little bit different, huh?
It is definitely a wonderful place here for me because where I live in the south of Germany, we don't have a beach close by, so this is like my little pleasure point to go when I have some time.
Yeah, it's a nice little escape. About 15, 20 minutes from the farm is a nice beach.
Yeah, beautiful beaches around here. I love California for the weather, for the beaches, and for all the nice people. I really enjoy my time here.
Yeah, that's very nice. I'm always teasing Denise because she comes from Germany and it's very cold there, but she doesn't like the cold at all. Even when it's not that cold in California, she's like, it's cold. She's got her hoodie on and yeah.
Yeah, that's true. I'm pretty sensitive to the cold weather. That's why I love it here so much. It's just beautiful and the sunshine gives you a good mood.
Yeah, it does. You're exactly right. I think I'd have to be in light therapy if I was in a dark climb. That's true. Well, we're glad to have you here. And we wanted to get today into some issues that people have with their horses. And some of the things we talked about is that Monty's six imperatives say that there are certain things that every trained horse should really be pretty adept at. And one of them is standing still. It's one of his main imperatives. And that kind of is the broader category are ground manners. And I'd like to talk with you a little bit about ground manners and even how it relates to riding, even the importance of ground manners. Is that a topic that you would join us in?
Yes, of course. I think that is really, really important because that's what I always say, the foundation of our relationship with the horses, that you are having good ground manners with the horse. Mm-hmm. And I always explain it like this is how when you build a house, you have to have a good foundation. Otherwise, everything is going to fall apart after a while when you go too high. And that's the same thing with good ground manners. It's really worth it to work on that kind of things first before you go further in the training with your horse.
All right. So you're just introduced to a horse. You don't know much about his ground manners or what his background is. I'm assuming he's been trained a bit. What's the first thing you do with a horse to see how his ground manners are?
Well, normally we start with a join-up to start the relationship built on trust. And it also gives you a good idea how the horses are behaving. So if they are a little bit nervous or pushy, and you can read a lot out of the character of the horses if you do a join-up and you're trained to read the body language and the equus language of the horse. So I would definitely start with that, and then I would start using our dually halter, which was created by Monty to actually have a really, really clear communication with the horses where you can easily say yes and no to explain to the horse what you would like them to do.
All right. So now is that a, if for those of us who don't know the dually halter much, or I do, but for those of people who don't know the dually halter, how is that that's explaining clearly yes and no and stop and go?
Well, the dually halter is a special training halter. Yeah, excuse me, because I always assume that people know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, it's okay.
It is a training halter what has a soft rope, an extra schooling rope on the hard part of the nose, and it applies pressure, so it gets a little bit uncomfortable to the horse if they do something what we don't like and we apply pressure to the halter, and it releases immediately if the horse does something nice, what we like them. So you can say with the dually halter actually yes and no by applying and releasing pressure in the right timing.
Okay. All right. So you've got a good communication going with this horse that you're introducing. What do you find out if he's bargy? He's just not respecting your space. Maybe it's because he doesn't know you. Maybe you've done one join up and he's saying, I don't think I want you to be the leader. I think I want to be the leader. What's the first thing somebody should do in that case?
Well, in that case, somebody definitely should know how to use the dually halter, so and how to apply pressure, and also how to talk to the horse in the right body language. And so what your body is talking to the horse, it makes a big difference to horses anyway. And I would introduce the horse first to what it means, pressure and release. So I set the rules to mm-hmm. yes and no. And from that point, you can actually do everything with the horse to explain them what you would like to do, that they respect your area. It's like a little bubble around you, mm-hmm. what is your area and the horse's area. And that is like based on respect. So if the horse doesn't respect your space, you have to step up and be a leader to control the horse's feet. So if they step in your space, you just back them up out of your space with the dually halter, mm-hmm. if that makes
okay.
sense.
Sure. And this is not something you can do just with any kind of halter. I'm not trying to push the dually halter here. I'm really being
very specific. Oh, yeah, you can do it with... Yeah. Uh-huh. Sorry, you can do that with every halter, but it's just not so clear to the horse. I mean, if you're timing and you have a sensitive horse, which is enough uncomfortable, a normal halter that you can apply pressure and the horse is like responding to it, then you can use a normal halter or you can use those rope halters. Mm-hmm. But the important thing is that you know when to apply pressure and when to release the pressure so that it's clear and fair to the horse.
Okay. All right. So you get him responding to your bubble and he respects your bubble. You're defining his bubble. And what's the next step to getting him to stand still now?
Well, that is always to be consistent. So this is very, very important to teach a horse. If you are setting the horse up to stand still, so you're using the right body language and maybe even you condition your horse to a word like whoa, what some people do, or stand still, or whatever you would like to do, to stand, to keep all four feet standing still from a horse. Uh-huh. And then you have to be consistent in your treatment, how you probably would school if the horse is moving a fit foot so that they know exactly what they are expected to do.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Because that's sometimes not clear what people do. So horses are very clever in taking over, mm-hmm. controlling the feet of the humans. Which is a very delicate subject because it is so easy and sometimes we don't even realize it, that our horse is actually guiding us instead of we are guiding our horse.
Tell me an example of that because I think I know what you mean.
For example, when my horse is like shortly standing still but then keeps the head so I'm keeping hold of the head and the horse is moving his feet around me in a very small circle. So actually that means that I'm not in control of my horse's feet. So mm-hmm. he is still not listening to what I would actually like them to do. Mm-hmm. And because I don't like some people don't know how to correct their horse's body or explain them exactly what we want. We get confusing situations where the horses are just not sure. Sometimes it's not even because they don't want to listen, but that there's a lack of communication, that we communicate to the horse in the right way, that we want to have their feet standing 100% still, not only giving us like the head close to us.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. So if he's dancing around you, his head might be in the right spot next to you, but eventually he's going to get you going in a circle too and move your feet first. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, that's what I wanted to say.
Yeah, exactly. No, I understand. And I think a lot of us are guilty of sometimes grabbing the, I know, especially in a show ring too, you tend to want to clamp down on that horse's lead way up high by that halter. And, you know, at that point, if you're showing, it's you're stuck. You can't train at that point. But so I go home, what do I need to do to get him to stand still so that I can let that rein have a little lax in it and make it his choice to stand still?
Yeah, exactly. That's what you already said. So it needs to be the horse's choice to stand still. So we have to explain to our horse that the best option for the horse is to stand still. And there they have like peace and nothing bothers them. So they have no pressure on the line. That you allow your horse first to make some mistakes, as you already said, to let the line pretty loose. So we are, for example, standing in front of our horse. I'm looking my horse in the eye, and I tell him with my body language that I would like him to stand still. So if he decides to move on with me having a loose line, I allow my horse to do that mistake, but then I just correct him back and explain that I wanted the feet to stand still exactly at that point where I stopped him. Mm-hmm. So, and if you do that for a few times, and it really depends on the horse's character, how many times you have to correct it or not. Sure. And some horses are very smart by getting the right thing, and some horses are a little bit more testing. Mm-hmm. But, so if you allow them to make a mistake, they learn for themselves, which is the good thing to do. So they don't get a negative consequence, what we use it, like the pressure of the dually halter for.
I like what you said about that. By allowing them to make those mistakes and then correcting them and then letting them relax, they actually get peace and relaxation, which is the reward that you're giving them for standing still. And that's probably the place where we get it wrong the most, is letting them completely relax and make those choices and then communicating that they've moved again and then back off again, backing off and letting them make those choices. That sounds great.
Yeah, and it is for humans. I mean, for our nature, it is so easy to always try to get closer and hold harder or stronger on the horses, because that's our nature, how we think we are able to control things, like to get to grab it more, because it is like just our nature. But for the horses, actually, it's the opposite. So as more as we allow them to figure out, they are allowed to have or to make mistakes, and they are allowed to do the intrinsic learning, what we call it. So they do a step, they get corrected for it, and then by the end they just, it's their decision. Standing still is super nice. I get a head rub for it, and everything is relaxed, and it's just not a big deal.
Perfect. That's perfect. And so this is good for standing still for the vet, standing still for the farrier, standing still in the show ring, and so many applications of keeping our horses and ourselves safe.
Yeah, exactly. But also, as I said already, it's like one of the biggest parts of the foundation of that we are as humans in control of the horse's feet. Because for horses, they are social animals. So whoever is in charge of moving feet is the leader.
Leader, yeah.
And So if you are in control, or if we as a handler are in control of the horse's feet, then they will give us the leadership. And therefore, if we are fair and consistent and clear to them what we want, and we are able to explain them what they are supposed to do, because they don't know. So it's our job to explain them in a fair and consistent way what we would like them to do. And if we got this point right, then you have already a huge step forward to a trust-built relationship, because yes, if they allow you to have them standing still in a relaxed, nice way, they trust you completely because you are in charge of their feet and they don't worry and have the flight instinct kick in where they have to move their feet. But by standing still and relaxing, they give you kind of, here, have my life. You are taking responsibility of my life now.
And that's right.
Like fully trust.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I think people can envision what you just said and go, oh, yeah, that's what we call a really good horse person. You know, that you can see a talented person from a mile away when they've got a horse that's relaxed and trusting them. And you say, oh, they just look at that. It just is so easy for them. No, you just described what they need to do to learn how to do that. I'm sure people would love to know more about your courses and classes that you're teaching there too. What's coming up in the next few months there that you're teaching?
Well, the next one, what is coming up actually next week already, is one of our join up and longline clinics, where we do all about the first steps of learning equus, the language of horses. And in October, we have an advanced course coming up and also introductory exam. So this is going to be very exciting for the students who will come in, because they are learning the advanced way how to deal with starters and like untouched horses. So this is going to be a lot of fun. And yes, so for next year, we've started to plan a few new courses as well, where we are handling untouched and wild horses. So this is going to be very, very interesting, I think, and a lot of fun to learn about horses and their behavior, their natural behavior, without people got to give them bad experience. So this is a very, very nice thing.
So you're working with rescues and you're getting these horses more adoptable from rescues and rehabilitation facilities.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
that's
what
wonderful.
We do with all our courses, actually. We have we help rescue centers. They bring the horses to us and we work with them together with the students. So it's a win-win situation for the horses and the students and everybody.
That's fantastic, lovely. Denise. Yeah, it really is fantastic. So how do people get a hold of you if they want to know more?
Well, they can write us. They can, first of all, if they want to have some more information, it's www.join-up.org. So this is the website what the school has, the Join Up International School. Or they can write at denise@join-up.org and give me a direct email if they wish and have more questions.
Great. I appreciate that. That was really helpful. That was really helpful information. I'm sure people will appreciate that. We'd love to have you back. In fact, if we could have you back for a trainer's tip, I'd love to have you on again. Would you agree to that?
Yes, I would totally love that.
Up next, our trainer's tip this episode comes from the Cowgirl Hall of Famer, Sheila Varian.
If I was to share a trainer's tip, it would be that things that you're doing with horses must be put in pieces, that horses don't learn. Let's see if I can explain this. Horses need to learn each thing individually, whether it's the start of a turn, the start of a stop. They need to learn each thing individually. And the less difficulty you make it for them, the less confusion you add to them, the quicker and the more solid they learn, meaning that if you're going to teach something, you have to teach it in pieces. Mm. And you can't run it together until they know each piece very, very well. And then you can start attaching each piece, if that makes any sense. I think now that I'm doing a few clinics, and I've been doing clinics for years, but not a lot of them. I never wanted to go on the road or anything like that. Mm-hmm. But I think more and more about the fact that rather than demonstrations, we need education.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I'm doing anything now, I'm putting it in pieces for people.
Mm-hmm. So it's an incremental habituation.
Learning process. Yes.
Learning process.
People mm-hmm. are trying to do, and that doesn't mean that you can't begin to teach a horse to turn around and stop in the same lesson.
Okay.
You just don't necessarily put the whole thing together. In other words, if you're going to teach him to turn around, you have to teach him first to move his rear end, second to move his front end, and you have to be able to do those individually before you can actually start them to do a turnaround or to move in a circle and be able to handle or control their front end and their back end before you go to that next step. People just think, oh, I'm going to go teach it to turn around, but they forgot all the steps that go into mm-hmm. a turnaround. That's
yeah.
what I'm talking about.
That's a great tip. And that is how the horse's mind works, right?
People.
Yeah.
Horses,
mm-hmm.
dogs, cats, everything.
Yeah, exactly. Very good. You're a good teacher. Thank you, Sheila Varian.
Well, thank you, Debbie, and let's ride.
What in the wide, wide world of sports is going on here?
Where in the world is Monty Roberts?
Monty is looking forward to meeting some new friends, two-legged and four-legged, in India. What? Monty's traveled to India this week, and he's working with the Brook Animal Hospital to help train some staff as to better equine practices. And then October 5th through November 1, Monty will be on tour in the south of England all the way up to Gleneagle, Scotland. Hopefully it's still part of the UK at that point. And then he goes on to Germany on tour from November 8th and the 15th. And you can find all these, on our calendar. I'll have Jen give you that in a second. But then December 1 through 5, he'll be back in California, and he'll be having a Monty special training in English and Portuguese. He won't be doing the Portuguese part. That's for the Brazilian translator. But we also have people coming that speak English and Portuguese. So it'll be a lot of fun. This is our third annual now. And then December 12 through 14, we have another Horse Sense and Healing for Stress-Injured Service Personnel. So for all that information, Jen, how can they find out?
You need to go to MontyRoberts.com. That's the website. Or you can get Monty's calendar by calling 1-805-688-6288. And for details about today's show, go to horsemanshipradio.com, where you will find links, photos, and more information about all of today's guests. And as always, we love to hear your feedback. You can follow us on Facebook at Monty Roberts. That's facebook.com/Monty Roberts. Or you can go to Twitter and follow Monty at twitter.com/Monty_Roberts. And if you're already a member, you just follow him at Monty_Roberts and you're ready to go.
I'm so glad you have to read all that stuff. That's tough. And many thanks to our sponsors.
There's a method to your madness. Is
oh
that what you're
gosh,
saying?
Oh my gosh, all those underscores and forward slashes. And but we really thank our sponsors who make this happen. And be sure to visit all the other great shows on the Horse Radio Network at www.horseradionetwork.com. And until next time, have many happy horse hours.
Woohoo!